Good morning, my name is Willem Faber and I represent this committee for the NCLT Northern Cape. Thank you.
I'm Bobby Kudai, Director General of Public Education. Bobby Kudai, Director General of Public Education.
Because that's the way to and the consultants and all that, but it's an extra whether we think that the document is not yet a public domain. So on that basis, I'm going to that member. That's for allow the department to make a presentation and it's at the end of the day. When all the necessary processes have been followed, will get the proper briefing with the necessary briefing. Let's note I'm going to welcome the
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity. Just to confirm, we are indeed waiting for provinces to get back with the targets that we've given them. In addition, we're still busy with final engagement with the Presidency, where the Treasury can agree with the targets and the context of the action plan. And thereafter, it's going to be made public. And the President will be party to the process of making it public. So that's the one important thing to note. The other important thing to note is that there are a number of things being spoken about currently. And what I'm going to speak to relates to a few important issues or processes in government. I'm presenting the action plan to 2014 towards the realization of schooling 2035, which is the sector plan for basic education. However, linked to this is a performance agreement that the Minister has signed with the President already. That performance agreement and the charges set in that performance agreement are derived from the sector plan, or rather the sector plan expands on those charges set for the Minister in the performance agreement. So in other words, we've taken what the President has given the Minister and based on that developed a sector plan. So that's the first thing. Secondly, in addition to the performance agreement, there will be a delivery agreement signed. Now, that delivery agreement is where the entire sector and all role players commit themselves to certain indicators and targets. Again, this sector plan expands on those targets and indicators there. The delivery agreement will be signed between the President and all those primary stakeholders who are responsible for implementation of that delivery agreement. Significantly for this select committee, the delivery agreement will have signatures of all the MECs for education from all the provinces, including the minister, including any other key role players. For example, the Minister of Health, because there's a responsibility in the plan related to health, will be a co-signatory. The Minister for Social Development, likewise, the Minister for Sport and Recreation, likewise, the Minister for Science and Technology, likewise, and any other parastatal or other role player who has a role to play in this regard. That delivery agreement is under discussion at the moment. The Presidency is reviewing it. We had a meeting yesterday. They added some things, subtracted some things, but we're in the process of finalizing. The President has given a directive following the July cabinet report that all these delivery agreements must be concluded and signed at the end of September. So we've got between now and the end of September to finalize the delivery agreement. Now, the performance agreement has been signed. That's tied up and the performance agreement between the Minister and the President. It's only the Minister that signed that. The delivery agreement, which is linked to the performance agreement and the sector plan, and the sector plan all needs to be aligned to each other. That's the reason as well, Honourable Chairperson, that we want all these things to come up together. Because if one comes up first and then the delivery agreement comes up afterwards, people won't say this was a draft and say, but in the sector plan there was that, why isn't it in the delivery agreement? So all these things depend on the President's final agreement, which is the delivery agreement that he's happy with for the entire sector. Now, let me then proceed with the presentation. The presentation is based on a sector plan, as I said. And the logic of the sector plan is as follows. Firstly, it's got to do with a time dimension. We need a plan that has a medium-term horizon. In other words, we need to plan in an education system taking into account how long change takes. And that is why it's 2025. It's also 2025 because government has got a vision 2025, and this plan tries to speak to that vision. However, we know that
we've got major challenges in this country that must be addressed as soon as possible. We also have an electoral mandate that spans 5 years, and it ends in 2040. For that reason, we've got as a primary part of the plan, action plan for 2014, but it's located within a medium-term horizon, which is up to 2025. So a lot of the targets and a lot of the interventions are targeted at saying we want this change that we've identified in by 2040. However, in saying we want it in 2040, we say in addition, these changes will link up to longer term plans. So that's what it's there for. The other important thing about the sector plan, I've said this before in this committee, is that up to now, we've had 10 different plans. And we've had a problem repeatedly about how concurrent functions make it difficult to implement the priorities and goals of education transformation in the country, because power functions and budgets are in provinces and national standards, and that makes it very difficult to implement. What made it really difficult to implement is that we didn't have one plan for education in the country. For basic education, we didn't have one plan. According to the PFM, a speaker, we had 9 plans in the provinces and 1 plan at national. And those plans didn't speak to each other. What we're doing now, and this is the first time we've got this since 1994, is a plan for the entire sector, one plan. One plan where certain targets and indicators have been identified. However, you will see in the presentation, honorable members, that it's one plan with a common set of targets. But it's not a plan which says we have one target for everyone, which ignores conditions. In fact, the opposite is that. We've taken conditions into account of each province, and the targets that we set are consistent with the conditions in each of the provinces. The provinces will then set targets down to districts and down to schools, and there too, the targets will be based on conditions that are there. And again, it's not targets where anyone can say, right, this is the target I want because it's not easy to achieve. No. It's a target determined by this country's commitment to saying we need dramatic change in educational achievement. We need dramatic change in educational achievement, of course. And that is what defines the kind of target we set throughout the school. Now, honorable members, this is a very, very long presentation. I'm going to summarize it. And please, during question time, if anything is not clear, please ask, and I will clarify. But essentially, when the document comes out, and I'm going to speak in a moment about how we can do that in this committee, even before it's released in the media, we want to release it to members of Parliament. But this presentation looks at the following. It looks at what's the high-level problem statement, what do we think is a problem which we need to fix. And then, what kind of solution do we need at a high level? And then, who are the key role players? Then, the significant part of the plan is the fourth bullet: presentation of output, sub-output, indicators, and targets. And then, importantly, especially when you develop a sector plan across concurrent functions, you've got to say, what are the legislative implications of a delivery agreement that we have to develop? What are the resource implications of the delivery? If you don't do that, then you've got a plan with indicators, but you can't implement it because it's an unfunded mandate, etc. Then what is the process for signing the delivery agreement? I think it's important to give you a sense of those timelines, and then I will conclude. Now, for this committee, it's not necessary for me to go into details about what is it that's wrong that we need to pick up. So I can do this very, very quickly. We know that we've made major progress in this country. By international comparison, our participation rate is very high. However, we still have some excess problems. We know we've got some funding problems, although largely our funding situation is significantly better than it was before 1994. There's been major development. But around textbooks and infrastructure, the school buildings, we still face pressure. School buildings, libraries, laboratories, and so forth. And we speak to that. But given those achievements, the major problem that we have in the system is learning outcomes. That's the key thing that we have to address. In particular, given inequality in South Africa at the income level, The problem of learning outcomes is the problem of learning outcomes for the poor. Our minister has said the crisis in education is the crisis in education for the poor African child. She said that to teachers. So that is what defines the target that we've got to look at. In whatever we measure, we see how we've done that. So I've said yes about poor African children, colored learners in poor areas as well have got major problems in terms of attendance. And then, why is this important? It's important because poor youth, young people, are in a cycle of poverty because they don't finish schooling, they can't get jobs, they live in poor areas, their children will live in poor areas. And in many countries, we've seen the debt kind of cycle continue unless we can stop it from some intervention. Now, what does this mean for us? Where is the problem? I mean, this is all quite overwhelming. But the problem, honorable members, is clearly that most schools are not performing the function they're supposed to perform, which is to provide learning opportunities that work for learners in those schools. When you design a plan, when you design a strategy, you've got to say, what is it in this whole big description of a problem that you've got to fix? And primarily, we've got to fix the school. We know no matter who does the research, no matter who does an analysis, if you're looking at learning outcomes, you can track it back to the school. You can track it back to levels of poverty surrounding the school, and you can track it back to functionality. Under that is about whether teachers are trained, whether teachers are teaching, whether they're committed, whether you have a principal that's got leadership and management abilities, but it's about whether the school is working. And that's what we need to fix. Then the other thing are there in that last bullet that we know are major factors. Socio-cultural environment inside and outside school. Poverty, big issue. Enabling, we need an enabling policy context coupled with a capable bureaucracy to support school. School management and governance. Teacher capability, but also commitment. Parental involvement. Adequacy of fixed infrastructure, school building. And adequacy of learning and teaching. Those are the major issues that we know are problems. Now, why have we not done better? Since 1994, we've had major, major progress in this country. And it had to focus on restructuring post-apartheid system, funding reform. I don't have to describe to you what the situation was prior to 1994. So a lot of effort had to go into that. And we made progress very quickly as a country. The critical shift since then, since we've done that, is towards learning outcomes. That's where we have to focus our attention now. The move, however, has been slow, and we need to now move towards evidence-based change and not simply talk about input. Teacher effectiveness and our capacity to support and manage the system right down to school level are critical challenges. So, honorable members, we're saying that, yes, the school is critical within that. It's about making teachers effective. We're making sure teachers are capable. We're making sure we have the commitment. But the other thing we're making, which I must emphasize to you, is that we haven't focused enough in the past on this factor, which is, can the bureaucracy support schools properly? District offices, provincial education department, the national department. Are we structured right to say that our aim is whatever we do must support that school to work better? No matter how many policies we write, no matter how many meetings we attend as people in the national department, the point is, no matter how many plans we develop, how much money we raise, the point is, will what we're doing impact on whether the school is going to work better? So, honorable chair, everything we do now in the Department of Basic Education, no matter what it means, every official knows they must answer that question right in the introduction before they present their plan. And then in their plan, they must show how what they're going to do is going to make a difference at the level of the school. So we've moved already, honorable members. A big thing is annual national assessment. These have already been introduced in 2008 in the system. And key to what we want to do in terms of changing how we work is to have annual national assessment. Now, people ask why. Why is annual national assessment important? They're important because, you know, remember they're going to focus on literacy and numeracy only. And those are the basics. You know that if learners don't learn in relation to literacy and numeracy, or languages and mathematics in later grades, everything else, A, they don't have the platform to learn, and B, if you don't have, let us say, ability, you can assume that the other is also going to be a problem. If you take it the other way around, if the system is able to succeed in making sure learners have high levels of literacy and numeracy, then that system is functioning well. Now, why would this help? Firstly, it will give teachers a better sense of the standards and the testing techniques that apply to them. That sounds simple, but you'll be surprised that many teachers in the system don't know that, in fact, whether what they're teaching is at the right standard and whether the assessments are at the right standard. You need, in a country, an external system to give teachers a sense of what's expected. Provinces, districts will be in a better position to devote special attention to the right schools, which schools are studying. Schools that make an effort will enjoy recognition, and learning outcomes will be addressed in a more informed manner by the SPD. We want to empower parents to take ownership of their children's education. To do that, we need to give information to parents. Now, we've done a lot of important things. I'm not going to stick on this. School funding, grade R is expanded, teacher development, we've got a framework that's in the process of being finalized, and we've got the QLCC, which is the social contract, involving primarily the unions and government, but also including parents. And even though we're in the middle of industrial action at the moment, it's very important to keep a focus on the significance of the QLCC. Now, the solution, whatever we do, must focus on teacher capacity and motivation, and it must focus on doing something different. Now, if you look at that last bullet, how do we intend to improve delivery substance? That tries to capture how we do things that are different from the past. Firstly, we want to develop ANA, Annual National Assessment, into a credible system that makes us all accountable. It's not about only making teachers accountable. As I said, is the bureaucracy able to support us? Are the districts, are the provincial education departments, is the Department of Basic Education able to support us? Not about us simply saying, look, the school result is not good, so the teachers are accountable. What have we done to support the school? Because it's a wild school holding teachers accountable. So I'm not saying teachers are off the hook, I'm saying let's put everyone in the equation. Working with and through provincial education departments is critical. You'll see if we have time, we've restructured and restructuring the Department of Basic Education to give effect to them, to work with and through provinces. Reorganization of departments to support provinces and schools, and a very strong focus on the social contract. We work very hard on labor peace. Even now at the beginning of possible industrial action that could continue, we still work very hard on maintaining labor peace and finding a settlement. Now, the action plan then tries to address all of those. I said the first time that we've got a plan that speaks to the whole sector, and in addition, we're focusing a lot of effort in institutionalizing HIDU as an independent entity to conduct assessment evaluations of how well we are implementing the plans and whether we're achieving the objectives. It's not us saying ourselves whether we succeed or not. We've got an independent institution here that reports directly to the minister about success or not. The key role players, as you will know, are many. I'm not going to go over that. We've put the slide down to show you how many there are. And if you think that's complicated, then look at this. This is how all the role players interact. And what it simply does is it shows that red bit there, you won't be able to read it, it's about effective learning and teaching. And all the others are about different role players, provincial officials, district officials, all of whom, in a particular way, have a role to play in achieving this. So, honorable members, then, we've got a particular outcome that are attached to what government's program is all about. Government, as you have seen through other presentations and reports and press conferences conducted by the executive, that government has identified 12 outcomes in terms of its program of action, in terms of priority. The first one, and the priority number one, is basic education, improved quality of basic education. And in terms of basic education, there are four outputs that have been identified. And this is not identified by us. It's to improve the quality of teaching and learning. This has been identified by the President. Undertake regular assessment to track progress. Improve ECD. Ensure credible outcome-focused training and accountability. These are what forms the crux of the Minister's decision. Now what we have to do is to say, if that's what the Minister is expected to deliver, what plan do we need to put in place? And for that, we've got particular outputs. In addition to what's in the delivery agreement, we've looked at the ruling party's 10-point plan, the manifesto of the ruling party, the medium-term strategic framework, which is government's interpretation of the priority, and then the President's 2010 State of the Nation plan. We've looked at that in developing the plan as well. And all of these outputs are interconnected, which is why you see how we set it. The other important thing you will notice when you get the details is that for each of these targets and outcomes, we have set specific provincial targets indicating the outcomes. I've spoken about them. These are based on our analysis of conditions in the province. We've given it to each of the provinces to comment in detail, and once they've responded, we will finalize it. Again, it's not simply about a province saying, we don't like it, lower it. If the province feels it might be lowered, we'll say why. And there's a compelling reason, the minister will agree. If not, we need to set targets which will take us by 2025, by 2014, to the point where we want to be as a country. And we need to focus especially on those provinces that are struggling at the moment. So out of this, honorable member, we've identified a number of goals, output goals. And you see the first one is to increase the number of learners in grade 3 who by the end of the year master the minimum language and numeracy competency by the time they reach grade 6. So again, in order to achieve these things in the system, we know that if the system is going to carry on focusing on grade 12, you're never going to fix the system. You've got to start early. And starting in grade 3 and focusing on numeracy and literacy has been shown internationally to be critical. The other important thing, when you say by grade 3, we're not meaning that our interventions will start in grade 3. If you are to achieve what we set down here by grade 3, you must start in grade 5. In fact, you must start before that. So what we say here is we are setting in grade 3, but the interventions will start right from year 1. And what is done then there is we set for literacy and numeracy a target based on a baseline. You will see for each of the outputs I'm going to show you now, the output goals, that's what we've done. We've got an output goal, there's 13 of them, we've got a baseline, we've got a target. Now what this does, let me just speak a moment about this. It tells us where we are in 2009, it tells us where we should be by 2014, and it gives us something that's measurable against which we can be able to. We, as I described, the entire system right down to it. And you see that with every output goal. The next one is to increase the number of learners in grade 6 now who mastered language and mathematics competency. And again, you will see the target, the baseline, and the target. If you look on top there, we say for each of these output goals, which of the major outputs they link to, what is the problem in relation to this particular issue, what will we do differently in relation to this particular output goal, and then what is the baseline and what's the target. If we go to the next one, output 3, you will see increase the number of learners in grade 9 now. Grade 3, grade 6, now grade 9. And by the end of the year, mastered again language and mathematics, we set the baseline for language, and a target, we set a baseline, and a target for mathematics. So you'll see that pattern, grade 3, grade 6, grade 9, and then of course grade 12. There's four key points in the system. We do a district analysis. That doesn't mean our interventions are only focusing on four grades. It means we're focusing on the entire system, but we're measuring in the foundation space where we succeed by grade 6. In the intermediate space where we succeed it, we assess it. In the senior phase that we succeeded, we assessed in grade 9. In the FEC phase, we assessed in grade 12 through an external examination, as you know, the National Senior Certificate Examination. Now, the other one is to increase the number of grade 12 learners who pass mathematics and the number of grade 12 learners who pass physics. So I'm going to tell you, see, that we focus on grade 3, 6, and 9, and 12. But in addition, we say in grade 12, given where the country wants to go, given the economy demand, we're going to focus on mathematics and science at that high level in order for people to be able to go to university and succeed in those areas of study that are required by the economy. That is why we're focusing on mathematics. So we try to cover everything. So that's the one for mathematics and physical science. Then output goals 7, 8, and 9. Improve the average performance of learners in languages in grade 6. Improve the average performance of mathematics in grade 6 learners. And improve average performance in mathematics in grade 6. Now, let me just explain here, because it could seem that we're repeating things. In all the other grade 3, 6, and 9 that I've presented, the targets are about the number of learners who succeed, who reaches a point of achievement, or pass, if you like. That's what all the other targets are. This one looks at the average score for grade 6 in languages, grade 6 in mathematics, and grade 8 in mathematics. We do this because we link it to international studies. You will recall the country keeps taking a beating about how we perform in international studies. That's the first thing. Secondly, when you set targets, you've got to be very careful that people don't then just focus on number which passes. Because as a country, we don't just want numbers to pass at a minimum level. We want the quality of the pass to improve. If you want to do that, you've got to set your target, which is why we set the target. And you'll see there, we're going to continue with SECMAC, and SECMAC is the international study done in the African continent, and TIMS is the international study, mathematics. And that's about grade 8. SECMAC is about grade 6. So both of them are international studies. That we'll use that to benchmark. So no one can tell us, yes, we're doing ENA as our own test, who knows, that it's credible. We're subjecting ourselves to international tests as well. If you now look at output goal 10, it's to ensure that all children remain effectively enrolled up to the year they turn 15. Honourable members, two issues here. One is our constitution, the National Education Policy Act, makes it law that education is compulsory up to the age you turn 15, or if you achieve grade 9, whichever comes first. It's compulsory. From age turning 7 to age turning 15, it's compulsory. As a system, we've got to give expression to that, but more importantly, give expression to its quality. And that's what this target is all about. We've got activities here to make sure that we achieve it as well. Then ECD, now again, very often people tell us we should put ECD first because it's the foundation and most important. This is not in order of priority. The earlier ones are all general, and then ECD is the one that is key in terms of the system and the foundation. And again here, the Honorable Chair was just, when you were talking informally earlier on, was saying, you know, ECD, major issue, especially in the province we come from. It's a major issue, I agree, in most of the provinces. Yeah, we've done very well in terms of quantity. You know, in a very short space of time, we can go. But from a quality point of view, we're sitting with this problem. And quality of those ECD centers which are not in school is a major challenge. So we're trying to fix that up here. Now, if you go to output goal 12, improve grade promotion of learners from grade 1 to 9. Again, here, repetition, failure rate, all of those we want to address. And again, here, honorable member, I must emphasize this point, and I can't overemphasize. When we set a target like this, you've got to be very careful, because a system that wants now respond to what you measure could create a situation where they simply pass learners to avoid high repetition. And that is not going to do anyone. We're going to have learners then, like in some countries, who finish the end of the school period or the, you know, the senior phase, and they're not literate or numerate at all, simply because they've been automatically passed. We've built checks and balances. So it's not just about low repetition, it's about making sure that in each grade the learning attainment is achieved. So Mr. Mutsue presents, you will see that in curriculum, which is one of our key interventions to achieve this, we are gradually allowing policy of the payment and on progression about the test and all that. Those are key policies that keep coming under review. So we don't run into problems where people are simply passed. In fact, our minister said the other day, she doesn't want one pass, one pass, all. She wants if somebody's passed, they must pass having attained what the curriculum expects of them in that particular grade. The last one then is output goal 13, which is to improve the access of youth to further education and training. And yet, it's a combined output between us and higher education and training. Because it's at that level, post grade 9, where the work of HEC and our work converges. We are responsible for schools in the SEC band, whereas higher education and training is responsible for SEC colleges, training with teachers, ABET, etc. So it's important that we work together. But the key thing, honorable members, is that we're sitting with a huge problem in terms of youth. Who are not in school, who are not in training, they're not in work. It's a huge problem. And part of the problem is whether in the schooling system we are preparing them well enough. The other problem is whether there are enough opportunities available to poor youth, especially in areas where there aren't these institutions available, to have opportunities to do something further. And that's something we work with the Department of Education and Training. So, honorable members, that's the cut of the plan. Obviously, there's a lot of detail to it. But in terms of legislative implications, we're saying that this action plan will not imply huge legislative implications. There's policy changes and revisions that are happening currently, but no big policy. In terms of the intergovernment relations legislation, we do not argue here that any of that should be impacted upon. There's a larger debate within government, but as far as we are concerned here, we want to use the sector plan to address those failings and weaknesses in intergovernment relations around for current function. So that's the point we're making here. On finance, we say largely within the MCEF and through efficiency, we believe that the system is very inefficient. Largely through the MCEF, we seek to meet the requirements of this plan. However, in two areas, which is infrastructure and LCSF, especially infrastructure, there will be a need for additional funding, and indeed we've been talking for a long time now between Treasury and basic education at the ministerial level and also at the level of officials to look at that additional funding. So, Honourable Chair, I indicated that in terms of timing, we're waiting for the provinces. The President has indicated by the end of September is the definite outer deadline. We're on track to get that ready. The provinces, all of them who've responded so far, have largely agreed with not only the content of the plan, but also the indication of the plan. We've presented this in our Council for Education Ministers on an ongoing basis, and the MECs are very committed to it, including the heads of departments, to whom we've presented in HESCOM. The institution that will be responsible for coordinating the plan and overseeing it is the CEM, which will also be known as the Implementation Force. So, honourable members, that is the presentation. I'm aware of time, and I've been talking a lot. But in conclusion, let me say that the South African schooling system is certainly at the crossroads. And we've got to do something that's significantly different to what we've been doing. Because if we carry on with simply providing interest to schools and writing policies, all of which are important, we've learned clearly over the last few years in 2024 that we need something in addition for those who take it. What we've tried to do in this plan is to describe in detail what that different things would be, and in addition we've given targets and measurements to it. We've provided a basis for accountability for all institutions, including this select committee, to have information available to it that it can use for accountability purposes. So focusing on input theory is coming to an end. The outcome-focused approach makes a lot of sense. And of course, we've been used internationally. However, we are aware of the pitfalls of that approach. I must say, this outcome-focused planning is not a silver bullet. Some countries have tried it, and unless they learn from the pitfalls and jump over, they don't succeed in what they want. So we're aware that it's not just because we're doing outcome-focused planning, the plan is Mozilla itself. We're aware of the demand around implementation. We're aware that we need a detailed risk assessment, we need to manage that. We're aware that you mustn't only measure one thing. Like, for example, you know, you measure only grade 12 results and people start keeping learners out of grade 12. We're aware of those and we try to deal with it here. We believe that successful implementation of the action plan will put us firmly on track in realizing our dream of a post-apartheid school system. We are under no illusion, Honorable Chair, that this is a very difficult task. The Minister is under no illusion that this is a very difficult thing. But I think it's that sober recognition that helps us in trying to understand exactly what needs to be done in order to ensure success. Thank you.
We're making a presentation on the curriculum reform that the Minister of Basic Education has spoken to. It's a presentation that will first pull from the, we're trying to give background to where these curriculum reforms emanate from and further give an indication of the decision in respect of how we will be moving forward as a system and as a department to implement this decision. Honorable Chair, members, this presentation, therefore, will give an overview of the terms of reference that have actually led to the kind of decisions that the Minister and the MEC have taken in respect of addressing curriculum reform. It further goes on to look at the recommendations that were made by a task team that has been put together by the Minister to investigate the challenges and say how then do we implement this going forward. Just as way of background, Chairperson and other members, you recall that we, in 2008, we declared that we had in our schools and in the system, the National Curriculum Statement, which suggests that if one were to look at from grade 1 through grade 12, what was being implemented in our schools was the National Curriculum. So there was no one province that would be implementing a different set of curriculum. The culmination of that curriculum was that in 2008 we had the first group of men coming out of writing a national curriculum. So in 2008, you would say effectively that we have come full swing in terms of the curriculum transformation, because we had the first lot of men coming out of the national coming out of the schooling system having gone through a national curriculum that had been set. However, you'd know that was not without challenges. And these challenges were challenges that were reported by teachers and reported in a number of ways, among which is what the director general has spoken to in the presentation. And I think at the heart of these challenges were two things. The one, other than teachers having complained about specific, having noted specific challenges that did not necessarily lead to sufficient teaching and learning taking place in the classroom, it was also observed from another angle where the learning outcomes or the performance of learners, especially in foundational skills of reading, writing, and calculating, were not becoming evident. And clearly that began to give an indication that at the heart of this could have been a problem with how the curriculum had been designed. And this is a letter that was evident from the public process that was undertaken. What then happened is that the Minister of Basic Education, soon after she had assumed office as the minister, she put together a task team. A task team made up of curriculum experts and in the country and other persons, eminent persons, to go and listen to the voice of the teacher. Because, you know, you can be there and draft policy, but unless you understand what it is that it means to implement that at the ground level, it will be something else. I can inform the committee here that the task team had an opportunity to receive information from teachers in two ways. Not only from teachers, but also other interested parties in the public. The one way was to have direct public hearings with the teachers. But secondly, we had also used electronic form of communication as a means of ensuring that we could solicit additional input from people. And what that meant, the minister, in the context of that, was to then ask the committee, having listened, make sure that you bring a set of recommendations that are practical, that can be implemented as a means of addressing those challenges. So in a sense, the minister listened, and having listened, says, what then are teachers saying, how can we further improve? And based on all of the necessary research, we were able to come up with this particular point. I'm going to run through high-level recommendations that came out of that process of consultation. I could indicate to the committee that in total we had over 900 submissions. If you take the number of teachers that attended the public hearing as well as the submissions, that written submissions that were received, we had well over 900 submissions that were received to have informed the process and decisions that are now are currently being dealt with. In terms of the major recommendations, Chairperson and another member, one of the key things that came up was that it was noted that we must have, as a system, we needed to provide a simple five-year plan that upon which we will improve teaching and learning. And I think the sector plan and the action plan 2014 that DG is speaking about is at the heart of that. It's beginning to point in the direction of things that need to happen. So in that context, Chairperson, a major recommendation that came was that let's have, as a country and as a system, a five-year plan at the minimum that can demonstrate and communicate a message that shows how we intend to improve teaching and learning. And that's why it said that the plan should provide a vision for a bigger picture, so that every level and every person in the education system would understand what this vision is that we're talking about. More especially in this regard, it was more at the level of curriculum. It was also to say that the plan must provide clear indications of the type of support that will be given to teachers, but that type of support must further translate to learning outcomes. And I think Action 2014 begins to give an indication of the direction in which we want to go as it relates to the improvement of learner performance, because that is at the center of, unless we can talk and demonstrate increased improvements in learner performance and learner outcomes, we would then be continuing to be in the same situation. Thirdly, it was also proposed that the plan must be able to have an internal external monitoring component, which would then seek to ensure that the benchmark at the level of attainment that one would wish to have would be measured. And I think in the Action 2014, we've also noted that at each of the different phases, exiting from the foundation phase, intermediate phase, senior phase, and grade 12, you would have external assessment. And it is in that context that we are beginning to deal with this particular regard. Chairperson, the second thing that the report on curriculum review said was that in terms of design of the current curriculum, we have had a situation where the design of the curriculum was such that it assumed that all teachers could be able to understand and determine the level at which they would have to teach specific concepts. The design was such that we had outline the curriculum, providing for learning outcomes, which are broad statements of what learners have to do. And with that, it was also packaged in a way in terms of assessment standards, which assessment standards are intended to provide for the content.
Mm-hmm.
But unless a teacher understood, it would also then create a problem, and therefore it was left for different interpretations, depending on the learner's level. And hence, a recommendation came that perhaps develop a set of simple and coherent curriculum documents. What this also sought to do, and it also emanated from the fact that you'd recall that the curriculum reform and implementation in the country was started in the GET phase before it was completed in the FET phase, and those two processes actually, although they were complementary, that they had taken a different approaches, and it was in that context that this recommendation said, make sure that when you talk about mathematics concepts can be scaffolded from grade 1 right up to grade 12, so that there would be that level of coherence and scaffolding of knowledge that would be required. And that was a major recommendation that came out of this particular process. Secondly, it was very clear that it said that we should move away from, or we should rather provide for a more coherent organization of knowledge in terms of how a curriculum document would then be presented to a teacher for a teacher to be able to understand. And it is in that context that it was saying that we need to move away from the design features of learning outcomes and assessment standards, but repackage. It did not say that throw them away because they were beginning to give an indication, but it is unpack those learning outcomes and assessment standards in a way that would ensure that the content, the concept, and the skills that are required would be integrated but clearly specified for teachers and do not leave them to chance. But thirdly, it was also very clear that with the development that had been on the curriculum, surely the different processes had begun to show that there were areas in our curriculum that had gaps. And this was an opportunity to close up those gaps. Other than coherence and ensuring that there would be coordinate continuity in terms of knowledge development, it was also saying, in areas where you therefore find that the curriculum has some gaps, ensure that you plug those in. And finally, it was then saying, do not keep assessment as an aspect that is very generic. Demonstrate for teachers, give clear indications of how teachers might be able to deal with that. So as we move on, and as I say, these were the major recommendations that came up of the TASTIM report. And this is a TASTIM report that was already put up in September 2009. And I will give an indication of how then the minister took these recommendations to the next level and to where we are at the moment. The report said that we needed to provide more support for the teaching in home languages. So all of the languages were receiving parity in terms of the support that they would give. But in addition, the curriculum policy had also said that there's a point at which a learner would select to use a particular language as a language of learning and teaching. If that child takes, for example, in the majority of schools, that at grade 4 level, many learners in the country take English as a language of learning and teaching. The question then begs, you allow learners to go through grade 1, 2, and 3, but when the only place where they would start to be taught in English, that's a grade 4, and they only get to know English at that point. So a recommendation was made to say, introduce for those learners whose language of learning and teaching will be English in later grades, make sure that they would have an opportunity to take that as a subject, not as a language of learning in the foundation phase, but rather as a subject parallel to a home language that they would have selected as a particular school. And an important thing about this whole process is how do you make sure that, because this is one of the fundamental principles of our curriculum and in the process, to say, how do you provide for support for learners that may be experiencing barriers? Because as we move forward, we would have to ensure that we provide for inclusion, but equally to address specific schools that may not necessarily be common in urban areas, but as you go to some schools and rural areas, you find that teachers have to grapple with multi-grade teaching. And it was therefore a question of how you provide for support in rural schools and in multi-grade schools in more specific terms. One of the key things that came out of this process had been that the Foundation for Learning program, which has been in the system, which was intended to provide more specificity to the curriculum, which DG has indicated, had begun to give a clear direction of how we may structure the curriculum. And it was then suggested that strengthen the Foundation for Learning, but ensure that it is replicated in all schools. Or in other words, all that it meant is that the design, or rather the form and content of the Foundation for Learning is sufficient to be taken as a program and therefore move forward in the context of curriculum. A clear area that also came up originally from the assessment processes, from the monitor, was how we would then introduce regular external assessment, and I think we've pointed to that. But in this particular case, it was going to say, what are those foundational skills? Because of importance here was having to deal with foundational skills of language and mathematics from the counting point of view. And that's why from the Action Plan 2014, you would note that a key aspect of those annual assessments would also be on literacy and numeracy or language and mathematics. And this is part of how this curriculum process also responds to the. There was also an issue about promotion and progression. A third bullet on this slide talks to the balance. The teachers had been saying, you know, in the GET phase, the balance between a year mark, the end of year mark, which would be your examination, like in other ways, and your continuous assessment are different compared to what you have in the FET phase. In the FET 10, 11, and 12, you would expect that 75% of the promotion mark is exam or end of year exam, whereas 25% is constituted by the continuous assessment, pool-based assessment that gets carried in the year. And it was in that regard that they said perhaps try to bring parity or between the year marks and examination. And finally, it was also to say, how do we address this whole question of PTA at grade 9 level? At the center, at the heart of this recommendation, chairperson and members, was that teacher training itself. You can talk curriculum, but unless that is also supported by teacher training, it would also require more dedicated support. And a proposal was made that there must be targeted in-service teacher training where it was greatly needed, but also ensuring that every level of the system would understand curriculum, so that as a principal, you would know, you can never become a principal of a school unless you would know that the notional hours that are allocated for teaching of curriculum in the foundation phase is 23 hours, and what does that mean? Because from a management point of view, you then need to make sure that learners are not disadvantaged in terms of the number of hours that they have to deal with. Similarly, a recommendation in this regard was how we have to get higher education institutions to align the teacher training program to help support that which must take place in the classroom. And part of that process DG has also spoken to in the Steaming 2025. I'm not going to spend much time on this because it was just partly indicating that one of the challenges we had was how the different levels of the system were supporting curriculum, and it was just merely a point of ensuring that each of the different layers and levels would understand the role that they play. A final recommendation that the committee made was on having to look at the whole question of learning and teaching support material in terms of saying, if you have a national curriculum, surely you need to have a common national repository from where all the materials that have to be in school can be evaluated, so that we do not have a situation where one province evaluate this material and another province evaluate, and they may come to a different conclusion, because this has been the case before, where provincial catalogs had been put in place, and what you find is that in province X, because of certain criteria that they use, which is not the same as in another province, it ends up that a book that or textbook that may not have been approved in province X gets approved and gets on the list from another province and so on. So that is why it was also moving to the point of having a national catalog. This is notwithstanding the fact that we already have a national catalog at 10, 11, and 12, but it is how we extend that provision for quality assurance materials that will reach schools in all classrooms. But a second important thing was that we say we needed to reassess the role of textbooks. If you come to think about it in an area where learners may not have immediate access to internet and related. How do you ensure that learning and support for learning takes place? And a textbook, if you come to think of it, if you have a teacher and you have a textbook, both those two components would ensure that learners would be able to have effective learning. And it was in that, in this context, that there is this whole aspect of reassessing the role of textbooks, and I think Action 2014 also begins to point in that direction. There are the other two, and perhaps the last one, bullet is, was a recommendation that says, how do you put mechanisms and guidelines in place to ensure that we can maximize on the amount of textbook pricing that we have, so that we can reap the benefits in terms of the allocation that is made. You know that the minister then already last year in December made announcements that would be implemented in 2010 as a means of beginning to address challenges that have been spoken to. One of the decisions was that we would develop curriculum and assessment policy statements. These are all that this statement says is that with the current curriculum that we have, redesign it in a way that it will provide for teachers more detail in respect of specificity of what has to be taught, the type of the content, the topics on a 10-by-10 basis, and the hours that are required. You'd also know that the minister had also announced that as part of assessment, which has been a major problem, and maybe many members around here would also have had that situation, where there had been a tendency to give young people projects. And oftentimes these projects were done by parents and they were done by young people themselves, young children themselves. And it was in this context that the number of projects required for each learning area or subject was reduced to one project per year per learning area of a subject. And it was in that way trying to mitigate the issues here. The other method that the minister spoke to, which was the decision, was a situation where, and in this context was how we define a teacher file. Because there had been prescriptions in some areas where a teacher would be required to have 8 different files of the same thing when they yet teach when planning could have taken place in one particular area. And therefore, that we said for planning purposes as a means of alleviating the administrative burden, teachers must demonstrate, they must have a record and evidence of the planning that they do. But that must be contained in a teacher file, in a single teacher file. But if they were teaching different subjects, surely other supporting material could be found in respective files for that subject, except that the planning must be done once. And there was this particular issue on learner portfolio. What has happened here is that there has a tendency has developed in the system where we were no longer talking more about the evidence of learner performance, which is at the heart of teaching and learning. Because evidence is how it brings accountability one, but also it is how you further track learner development. And a tendency has developed in the system where schools were developing these separate learner portfolio files. Mm-hmm. Which portfolio files to, I mean, there could be schools where a whole week or 2 weeks was just meant to prepare learner portfolio files. And clearly that would begin to eat into teaching time. And how you then address that, the minister has to say, ensure that there is evidence of learner performance, but make it available in appropriate sources. Because if you have it in an appropriate book or in an appropriate finding mechanism that will be used, that will be the basis on which it will be done. Chairperson, that is broadly the decisions that have been taken and which are now being implemented in schools. The question then is, the Minister of Basic Education about a month or two ago began to make full her intentions of some changes that would be brought into the system going forward. Let me indicate that as part of that planning process, the minister had also put up 3 committees together. The minister had appointed 3 ministerial committees. There's a ministerial committee that has been put together for the development of the curriculum and assessment policy statement. So that committee is currently dealing with the development of what we call the CAP. There was a committee that the minister had put together to anticipate the planning in relation to the transition overload. One of the problems that teachers had expressed was that there was a major transition overload, because if you took that a learner in grade 1, 2, and 3 was doing that three learning programs, literacy, numeracy, and life skills, when they got to grade, when they get to grade 4, 5, and 6, they start to move from three learning areas to eight learning areas. Now the question is, what had also been established is that even among the eight learning areas in the intermediate phase, you compare them to the same learning areas in the senior phase, there were in some subjects or in some learning areas, there were areas that were repeating themselves. They were covered both in the intermediate phase as well as in the senior phase. And the recommendation was therefore made that we need to reduce the number of learning areas or subjects in the intermediate phase from 8 to 2. That was the one committee that the minister had constituted and he brought the report upon which we will be able to make decisions. And lastly, Chairperson, is the committee on LTSM, based on the recommendations that have come. That report is still to be decided upon in terms of its recommendations. But what we are bringing to you here now is the first report or recommendation that, in terms of process that has come up of the ministerial committee that was developing the curriculum and assessment policy statement. What this begins to show is that this curriculum and assessment policy statement will be implemented in the foundation phase in 2011, meaning in grades 1, 2, and 3 next year, we will have the redesigned curriculum and assessment policy implemented based on which curriculum and assessment policy statement will provide for specificity in terms of topic, in terms of the content, in terms of the week, in terms of the hours that have to be allocated per topic, in terms of the type of assessment that a teacher must be able to use to do a particular assessment. So these will be implemented in 2011. You know that the minister has said the rest of the CAP documents will be implemented in 2012. And the whole reason for that was that we are using the process from now until end of 2012 to ensure that we plan for the introduction of the curriculum and assessment policy statement in the intermediate phase. That's an area where there is a reduction, and in all other phases where there's no reduction in terms of the number of learning areas. There are slides that will give you an indication of what is being proposed. What's important for members to know that the CAP document will now become the National Curriculum Statement, Curriculum and Assessment Policy, because it is on the basis of this that we will be able to judge whether we have been able to move. On the basis of this, and to ensure that we also provide support for literacy and numeracy chairperson, there has also been an instance where we have requested, and given that we will be introducing an additional language in more precise terms, there was a need to begin to look in terms of how we will allocate time, so that we do not say we only have 23 hours, but how is the time allocated. We are giving more guidance to teachers in terms of how time will be allocated to ensure that it takes into account the three learning areas and the three subjects plus an additional subject that would be added. These are the changes that are being introduced. You'll see on the left side, it talks to the current policy position, three learning areas. The task team recommendation has come to talk about which subjects must be offered. And it was talking about whereas we had languages, and you know that in the current policy position, the languages are not clear. And that's why we've always had a problem where schools would decide not to offer another additional language. But the task team and the position of the minister was, let us now move and implement languages, so there will be a home language, so every learner will be able to take a foundation phase a home language, NFS additional language, and mathematics and life skills. And if you add all of that, life skills will be made up of all of the different components, beginning knowledge, which beginning knowledge more talking about the concepts that learners may need or would require as they move forward in terms of understanding concepts that introduce key concepts of science and mathematics, and that's what it suggests. Chairperson, these are also changes in the intermediate phase. In the intermediate phase, the minister and the Council of Education ministers agreed to reduce the number of learning areas from 8 to 6. And those subjects that have been reduced are indicated on this slide. On the left side, we give you an indication of all of the 8 learning areas that are being that are currently in policy. And on the extreme right side, we now give you a list of subjects that will be offered in the intermediate phase from 2012, when the CAP documents are implemented. You'll note that in the past, or in the current context, we have languages, but what we are now doing in terms of policy, we are even beginning to split languages into home language and first additional language. We have natural sciences and technology. Natural sciences and technology have now been merged into science and technology, and the rationale behind that I've given an explanation too. Economic management sciences is a subject that has now been totally taken off from the intermediate phase. However, it is retained in the senior phase because there's always been an argument that are we not moving, are we not killing it? It has been taken off from the intermediate phase, but it is retained. And the whole rationale is that it has been found on studying the curriculum for intermediate and senior phases are the same. Many of the assessment standards are catered for in the senior phase, and those elements or assessment standards that do not have been catered for in economic management sciences in the senior phase are integrated in some of the other subjects. That is why, while you have 6 subjects in the intermediate phase, which are these that we've just explained, we now have, we will go back in the senior phase to 8. We will retain the 8, and that's why we're giving an indication. And in fact, if you split the language, it will actually make them the 9 subjects. So I'm not going to talk about the assessment because DG has clearly catered that in terms of how we are moving with respect to assessment at grade 9. What was more important was to think more about how we bring in line the weighting of continuous assessment in the DET phase to the FET phase, and this is clearly more in that particular regard. One of the things that teachers had also said was that why don't we standardize so that when reports come out, we know that a report for every learner would be the same across the system. We used to have 2 rating scales, the one that will speak to 1 to 4, and the other that will speak to 1 to 7. Now the question, depending on the parents and people's understanding, people may have different interpretation of what it means, and therefore, a decision has been use the same rating scale, but DG has spoken about the whole question of promotion and progression, and I think what we're talking about here is just a means of ensuring that you provide support for progression of learners from phase to phase. But the annual national assessment will be able to give us a sense of how well we are doing in this particular regard. I think we get with regard to the implementation of the CAP, Chairperson and members, you would know that the curriculum and assessment policy statement will be implemented in the foundation phase in 2011. The question may then be, what then happens in other grades? Because that's an information that we must get. So we're communicating at 3 levels. One, we have a curriculum new that we use to communicate with our schools on a quarterly basis. We use secular as well as take opportunities in terms of our interprovincial meetings as well as stakeholder engagement. But what will happen in 2011 is that we will be implementing the CAP in the foundation phase. We will have to have a transition phase as we prepare for the implementation of the CAP in other grades and ensure that in 2012 we will go full scale implementation in all of the remaining grades. I think that broadly provides an indication of the centrality of how we want to stabilize curriculum to ensure that we can move with speed to moving to getting learning outcomes achieved in our schools.
Thank you. candidate one as members of parliament, we are starting with candidates. So there's sometimes not really that everyone comes with his or their own side when we enter into the department. I'm going just to refer to the business, just to elaborate a little bit. I think I'm not really sure, because we talk about, you know, when we talk with the argument, the performance argument between the president and the president, the issue of the delivery, you know, looking into the issue that problems of I'm going to allow members to interact with the presentation. Honorable, or let me just take it and see. Honorable Fighter, Honorable Citizen, Honorable Blighty, Honorable Movie, Honorable Fulham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks, DG, for the start of presentation. I'm glad that we're changing back to a system that actually will work in our situation in South Africa, because it is a unique situation that we find ourselves in, unfortunately, and we have to make it work. The curriculum and system changes, all is good and well, and I haven't got a problem with it. The main problem to me stays that not all teachers have the capacity and perhaps the skills to perhaps help children understand certain subjects. And, you know, we can change curriculums and we can change everything, but if the teachers don't have the capability to help children understand subjects like science, mathematics, I still believe that is the problem. And you know, the thing that works, and not before, because before 1994, but I think it still works in other countries as well, and that is what we call, used to call this of inspectors, that went to the schools and actually sat at the back of the class, assessing the teacher itself. It got the teachers to perhaps, at that stage, take more care of themselves, teaching themselves how to prepare better for children and prepare better for classes, because I remember when I was a child, specifically, that when the inspector came, you know, the teachers were like, they were all running around, and the inspector came with his suit sitting right at the back, and the teachers were much better than previous, you know, they were very scared of the inspector, they were properly in place, everything was right. And I just think, you know, these days that we perhaps must look at teachers that they're not exactly on par on where they should be. And perhaps we must just look at some system like inspectors as well, getting back to schools and looking if teachers are really educating children the right way. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. My first question goes around the same as question of my honourable colleague father, and where does the inspector system fit in? And that question must include the early childhood development also, and not only the from grade 1 to up to grade 12. The early childhood development, we must also see that before the children go into the foundation phase of schooling, then we must assess the quality of the early childhood children also. So, because their performance from grade 1 depends on what they did have on in the early childhood development phase. That is what I believe in. And also referring to the different languages, the mother tongue and the second language, we must also see to that. And maybe the department must just tell me if they plan in connection with that. So that we must make sure from the early childhood development that
the passes, the number of passes is not important, but the quality of the passes. The other one which I am very much concerned about is the learners must be in school up to 15 years. Now, if the learners pass all the grades from grade 1, then they will be in the year 15 in the grade 9, and in the previous understanding of the grading of the schooling was 7. Now, I think the grade 9 is not applicable, especially when those learners are leaving school and they must go into the private sector or the public sector out there. And on 15 years old, they are not yet ready to get into any employment. So I think maybe the department and into the system, we must also think rethink that we must revise that and see if the age must be 60, so that we can go to grade 10 and not grade 9. That is the one which the department can elaborate on, if there's any ideas on that situation. And the school syllabus must speak to the learners and the learning area. And from the early childhood development phase, we must see to it that syllabus and the learning area must speak to each other, so that when those children arrive at the grade 1, that it must be followed up. So there must be a correlation between the different phases in the plan. And then also the GET and FET and the university qualification. If the learners progress from grade 1 up to grade 12, then they must be ready to be taken up in the FET colleges and also in the university. That quality must also be secured by our new system. And what will happen if the department telling us that, told us this morning, that from next year this new system will be implemented. If my understanding is incorrect, then you must just tell me. But what will happen to those learners who already taught into the previous one, which now will be phased out? How will they fit into the new idea of the education department? So that we don't have the problem when they arrive in grade 12, that there's again that decrease in the passing rate of the learners in grade 12. And I do have a problem with the different percentages of the exams and the year marks. From grade 1 up to grade 3, there will be 100% assessment. I believe that we must look at if we can implement a certain percentage also to examination from grade 1, because we must prepare the learners how to handle the examination from that grade and not only from the grade 4 to 9. Grade 4 to 9 is 50% exam, and my understanding is 50% to the year mark. And then there's a difference from grade 10 to 12, 75% exams and 25% year mark. So why don't we go nearer to each other? Not 50% and then after that falling back to 25 and 75. Why don't we go from the grade 4 to 9, 25% and 75%? Can you just explain me why that understanding is the plan? That's all, thank you. That's all. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I know you will stop me.
Yeah, Chair, what I want maybe is for DG to clear the perception I have in my mind now. But this is not a total new curriculum. This, you're strengthening
the existing curriculum. Hence the name National Curriculum Statement, comma, Curriculum and Assessment Policy. Because the perception that is there outside is that you bring in new systems. So I want you to put emphasis on that. So I must clarify. And the other point that I wanted to check on the GT, I know that you mentioned at the beginning of this meeting that this document is actually still in the cabinet, is still working on it. I just want to check if are you consulting with other solicited by in of other stakeholders in the process of making this document. Have stakeholders would mean teacher organization, because at a point where you want to put it public, they would know you would hit a rock, because they would refuse to accept some of the things that are inside. That is another point that I wanted to make. I also wanted to DD to clarify me further on this independent institution that says maybe whether this name is going to be cascaded to as far as district at the level of the district, because from what I see, its main function is to assist in terms of monitoring of the implementation of the plan. Whether this thing is going to be cascaded towards that level. I also wanted to check DD. I know there are systems like you strengthening the curriculum in terms of curriculum. Yes, it's correct. But I wanted to check with DD because you mentioned something like the bureaucratic structure that are there. I know for sure that there are EMDD establishing all provinces and districts. Whether this independent institution would have members or the members of the, because they're doing the same thing. The EMDD are doing the monitoring, you're creating another monitoring body. Are you going to put together the structures to make sure that they are effective in terms of their monitoring capacity? The last question, Chairperson, will be on the teacher training. Because you see, you have mentioned a week ago that teachers' effectiveness are a critical problem. But, and we know for sure that in all the meetings that we have, teachers complain of that. I know from Limpopo, they said they have been brushed on 1 hour training workshop and expected to implement. How are you going to take them through the system to make sure that at least they understand and implement 2011? Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. Chairperson, I'm going to start with the deputation he has passed. But when the report was out, there were many interviews and confirming the different signals. Minister saying we've done away with OPD with the new daily on the path. And to say, have you done away with OPD, the principles, and the methodology, or you have streamlined it? Because what you are doing, it has to be out there. Because there's something else. We're happy that you brought back the old system. So it's because of we had everybody had the minister saying, everybody that talked to APA is gone. So what is it that we are going to be having next year at the foundation time? Another one is on, we have not emphasized in our input on the need for orientation, whether you're saying orientation or you're saying training to the foundation phase. We know where we're coming from, at least I'm coming from there. The question, because you're not really touching it, maybe assuming that teachers, but also when the report was out, the minister was saying there will be no training. So I'm still saying there will be no need for reorientation or training for foundation phase, and next year, preparing for 2012. Because you will also be blaming teachers at the end to say, we're now streamlined and classified everything, but you're failing to do this, and everybody attacking teachers under the ground. The other one is the, I'm not sure whether it is, I see training only on your paper for HODs, for principals, for provincial support staff. They are not implemented. HODs, they monitor, they do kind of support, but the majority of possible ones, there's nothing that talks about empowering them for them to implement this. The other one is on the this thing of learner profile. The failure of that, there is a way with learner profile. However, you are saying there has to be an evidence that an educator must submit when needed. And then you come up with the 100% grade R to 3, but also that one maybe in your next presentation, because you're saying there's an external for those three subjects at grade 3. But then in the other slide, another page, you're saying 100%. I'm not sure those three, if you say there's an external, I'm supposed to say 100%. So in the question, whether it's semantics, running away from this weight of learner profile, but at the same time, an educator must have an evidence. Because if you say 100% cash, how do you arrive at 100% this learner must pass? If you say 75% cash, where is the evidence? Is it not just the name that says Delta Wave, but also must accumulate it somewhere, tell learner that should be my evidence to say think it is passing because based on this. Last year you are talking about a foundation phase of a study program, and now you are having I don't know how many four subjects, and then at the intermediate you are saying you have reduced that implies but at foundation phase, we have more teachers. At intermediate phase, we will have less teachers. That suggests some kind of requirement from intermediate phase, which is at senior primary school, to the foundation phase, because there's an education of that. And that may also cause instability. To school. The teachers and I know that the chairperson will come to say, give me a second chance.
Thank the department for ensuring that in the template of the delivery agreement that we have reflected monitoring mechanism which has been the weakness of all the plans that the department has. So that you can see if it's not yourself. And the second issue is in your background, you make a good background, you identify the involvement of health, involvement of social development, and also the SDGs. But when you go down to the plan that you presented to us, there is no reflection of what exactly will they be doing. And the children that are trapped in poverty and all the kind of things. Nothing that talks to those issues that you mentioned in your program statement. And also, is the implementation of the education, compulsory education from 7 to 15 years. In implementation, how are you doing it? Because in rural areas, we still find that there are kids that are not yet in school at 9 years, 10 years. In practical terms, are you ensuring that happens in such cases? And the last question was on the mother tongue. Does it also apply to former models in schools where you find that most of our kids are schooling there? Which at the English language will they be using and the same language for mother tongue?
well accepted by other people, it will be based on the conditions of the command. One would be more interested than is there a framework that has been submitted to the common group? That it shouldn't be that the common group that will come up with, you know, the conditions, but that issues that really will apply across all the common group. One is interested whether the framework stays in the common group.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, for those questions. They've hit the nail on the head, a lot of the questions, and helped us, in fact, clarify quite a few things. We're going to split the questions in two ways here. We'll deal with the curriculum issue. Also, got Professor Chisholm in the room, who is the Minister's Technical Advisor, and also sitting on the Ministerial Committee, dealing with the National Curriculum Statement, so she'll contribute as well. But let me deal with the broad questions, especially those pertaining to the action plan. Chairperson, you started off with the point about every new minister, new style, new plan. Our minister has been very careful about that, she doesn't want to do that. In fact, if you look at the action plan, it builds on what we've done before. It identifies gaps and it looks at how do we deal and address the gap. So there's no new plan on the table. In fact, even the curriculum review council see that the name of the curriculum stays and it will stay. From time to time, when there's an amendment to the curriculum statement, would indicate amended as at date. In 2012, there's a slight revision would say as at amended, very much like one does with legislation. But we've only got one curriculum in this country, the National Curriculum Statement. It's been there for a few years, it will be there for the future. And in any system, things come up that require you to make an amendment, like you do a legislation, and that's what we do. So our minister has been very careful that no like new brand of curriculum here that we deal with. The question around performance agreement, delivery agreement, a few members asked about that in clarification. As the chair indicated, we got a performance agreement in this case with the president, and between the president and as far as the delivery agreement is concerned, this has been put in place to ensure that all role players who are involved in the delivery of a particular outcome, in this case basic education, commit to something. Now you put your finger on the name here. Given our problems around intergovernmental relations and concurrent functions, how do you enforce these targets and plans? And this is what these initiatives that try to address. And the presidency explored a few options. Do you change legislation? Do you then use Intergovernmental Relations Act? Does it provide enough scope, etc.? And all of those were explored. The position the president reached was to say, he's not going to call for any review of legislation. What he's going to do is ask for a voluntary signature on the part of anything. Health and education to a delivery agreement. In other words, what the delivery agreement does is get the MECs with all the provinces in education, with the Minister of Basic Education, and all other major role players to commit themselves to a delivery agreement. Once you've committed yourself to a delivery agreement, that's new business. Now, you have heard the President speak after the State of the Nation address this year, and you have asked now, what are you going to do to enforce it? What he said is that don't try and push an issue about how do we police this thing and punish people. Let's push the fact that people have committed to a global agreement and time. How do we understand what is contributing to the problem and how to get treated? Obviously, these issues around the delivery agreement is primarily in the political sphere. We've got a technical sphere where we deal with it. And as far as we are concerned, it's very clear. As a DC, I've got a performance agreement. In law provided for. And my minister can exercise responsibility on the basis of that. At the political level, we don't have the equivalent. So what we're doing now is the president who appoints ministers has got a performance agreement and is within his power. The MECs then commit to this, but they have an agreement with the provincial premier
end with the president and all of them, no matter which province one is talking about, have some kind of political accountability through their party.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how this thing will be exercised. It's a bit complicated, but that's the point at which it was reached, to come to the conclusion of the decision. So for all the political players, the delivery agreement, their people commit to it voluntarily, but then all the other mechanisms that govern our political appointment fall into place. Out of that, the performance agreement for officials like myself then fall within the law, which is quite clear. I don't know if that clarifies it. Among the members have follow-up questions, we can get to that as well. Then, Honourable Chair, you asked a follow-up question in relation to provincial targets, and again, you put your finger right on it. We won't, and we can't say to provinces what your condition, what your provincial target should be. We negotiate. And what we've done is a very detailed document, which we'll send you as well, where we've embarked on a technical exercise to say for each of the provinces, what are their baselines, what are their conditions, therefore, what should be their target. We then engage with them, and they say, look, we think the target is too high, in which case we say, but why is it saying that? I must say now that not one of the provinces has come back and said the target is too high. They all say the targets are fine because we want to get to a point where all provinces are equal. Remember, we've got one education system in the country. Our ultimate goal is that all learners in all provinces must reach this target. So when I say we are counting for conditions, I'm not saying forever and a day there's going to be an excuse. I'm saying all that does for us is to say, what are those challenges we need to address to ensure that all the learners in the country reach this target? So let me go a bit quicker now, because there's been a lot of questions. Honorable Favor, some people call you Father, some people call you Favor. I apologize for getting it wrong. And, you know, even the last time I've been here, I moved between Favor and Father. Is it Father? Honourable Father.
Go this way.
You've spoken about teacher capacity as the key thing. And do we understand that? Absolutely. You know, whatever curriculum and system one puts into place, whatever changes one brings about, it's about teacher capacity.
Mm.
The other thing, though, is that we're not taking anything away, that we must focus on teacher development. We've not done it enough. We've not succeeded entirely with neutral teacher training. We've been even worse with in-service training. We accept all those things. But in addition to that, very often, in the way you design your curriculum, impacts on whether a teacher can be effective or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that Mr. Mansour was talking about. And let's, as far as the curriculum is concerned, make sure that the curriculum enables good teaching,
mm-hmm.
rather than takes away. But your point is relevant, and we still need to focus on the relevant. And in fact, you've raised it, Mr. De Villiers. I'm not sure if it's De Villiers, so I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
The inspectorate has been a big debate. We set up NIDU as an independent entity, so that it's not government driven. I've got absolutely no say over NIDU. I could answer about what NIDU comes up as the DG, but I've got no say about what NIDU does. So that's there. In addition, you must understand that inspectorate is not just a good thing for two reasons. One is, historically, even though we say that inspections were good, they were bad in a large part of the system. In large part, especially in the system that caters for black people in the country, inspectorate was something that didn't contribute to good education outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's taught that does will see that.
Exactly.
Now, what we need to then say, what's good about that system? There was the development side, which we introduced in terms of curriculum advice. There's the accountability side, which NIDU will pick up and be picking up through what we're negotiating currently in the LRC. But let me say this, that the way inspectorate or whatever we want to do will work best is to have a result. And that's what NR ultimately was. To say to teachers, whether we're going to do NR in grade 1 to 6, it will only be externally done in grade 3. But it will say to parents, it will say to teachers, look, here's your result. There's a comparable school where the result is better than yours. Speak to that. So rather than, you know, when I was teaching science, I had an inspector who came in who knew nothing about science and kept telling me what I should do, which is laughable. And that wouldn't have been the focus. The focus for me would have been better if they said, look at my results that I was producing, and let's talk about that. So that's what we're trying to do in relation to inspectors. In terms of grade one, assessment before grade one,
I know what you're probably saying there, Mr. Tavilliers, but then we've got to be careful that in a system, schooling in a constitution is compulsory for anyone. So assessment can be used as an exclusion event. All assessment must do is to say, this child has got the profile of need, the system must make sure they educate this child. That's the policy, the philosophy of our system and our constitution. What some schools do is they use assessments and say to the child, you can't get into grade one. That is not part of the schooling system. All children, including children with learning difficulties, must get into grade one. That's our law, that's the constitution. If you get taken to court, if I get taken to court, or the minister gets taken to court, we can't say this child can't be in school. So, we need to say these assessments must be diagnosed. What some schools have done, and I've seen it, they do it and then they say the school is not, the child is not school ready. According to our law, if a child turns 7 on the phone, there's no such thing as a child not school ready. That child must be educated in some way. So that's the issue that we're very strict about in the system around the system. Language, mother tongue, and second language, there, Mr. Mosquera will speak to that one in terms of what we're doing. Schools, up to 15 years, instead 16. Currently, what all countries do is they say, we want to provide compulsory education for 10 years. We've got from grade R to grade 9 for 10 years. We provided that compulsory. So that's the one thing we've got in the plan. But the other indicator we've got in the plan is to say, let's keep young people productively involved, going up to about so that up to the point where they're supposed to finish grade 12. So your point is catered for those two indicators. One is law, which is compulsory, and the other one is the other issue. In terms of syllabus, Mr. Mosquera will speak to that. G and FET university qualifications must be ready for universities. Again, there the targets are spoken to around what we're going to measure. Those learning departments that qualify them for studying a bachelor. Those mathematics and such. All of those are intended to make sure the system equips learners to cope with what's going on. That's a critical thing. And there's a lot of debate around how independent assessments at universities and so forth, and those issues we can speak about. You know, we've also had assessments of our examination and our curriculum benchmarks internationally, and they've come up looking very positive, so we can speak to that as well. Our learners already in the system be affected by curriculum revision. I leave that to Mr. Mosquera, so I don't speak too much. CAT, EMR, versus the German, I'll leave that to Mr. Mosquera. Mr. Flykey, so again, this question has come up. Is it a total review? Are we simply strengthening? Let me spend a bit of time on that, and all of us will speak to that issue. There's been a number of messages that have come out, and feedback we got from how the media has been raising concerns to us, which we've addressed in the media. What is the situation? Situation is that we've got a curriculum, we've still got the same curriculum, we've revised it to address certain challenges in that curriculum which affected implementation negatively. To put it more positively, we've implemented revisions to a curriculum based on a review done by independent people, not government people, independent people, including government people, that said that these are implementation challenges. We're addressing it as to make implementation easier. We've still got the same curriculum in its design, right? If you, and I've advised journalists to do this, if you go and you Google, I don't know if some of them have the chance to play on the internet, but every now and then I like to Google something. If you Google, just Google outcomes-based education. It will take you to, I don't know how many sites, but go to the one which is Wikipedia, which is a very nice site, it will give you a lot of detail. And it describes OBE there, and it describes it as follows. OBE is an approach to curriculum, genetic approach to curriculum, which means a few things, but in essence it tries to distinguish between a traditionalist approach and a more progressive approach to curriculum. It's not any one new curriculum, it's everything. Secondly, it says, strong article, it says OBE includes kind of methodologies that are based on constructivist approach. Now, I trust that. You can't teach science without constructivism. And what constructivism means is, I take this young lad, look at where he is, and then take where he is and build to the next step. And from the next step, build to the next step. That's constructivism. That's the methodology. Now, is that still in our curriculum? Yes.
the methodologies are in our curriculum. Then is it OBE, according to Wikipedia, yes, it's OBE there. But if people say that we are rid of OBE, we will not go back to a traditional curriculum, because that is philosophically embedded. That's not where we've gone to. Now, when the minister said OBE is gone, what did she mean? She meant that those problems that people have been picking up in relation to OBE in the South African curriculum, national curriculum statement is South African national curriculum statement, by the way. That's a very, in fact, more accurate in South African school national curriculum statement. We have curriculum for all of this. This is the school's one. When the minister says she's taken out this part, what is she taken out? Before the curriculum revision came in, with the design features of the curriculum that flowed from OBT is what we felt was causing problems. And what are those? It was the way we had provided the curriculum in terms of outcome and in terms of the assessment. And those were the two things that linked up to what many people call our curriculum OBT. And in the review, we felt that that is what was causing problems, as Mr. Stewart indicated. It wasn't specifying enough the kind of knowledge, what needed to be covered in that knowledge, the assessments, and so forth. At some point, people even say, you know, don't use textbooks, etc., and you have group discussion. That's OBE. That wasn't OBE. It wasn't our curriculum. And when the minister says that, she's taken those things out. Now, if you look at the new CAP document we're writing, the curriculum and assessment policy statement, it removes those two design features from it. So it removes that which has been a problem. The methodologies we apply in a classroom on the chair, so slow from what, if you go to Google, you see what OBE does is there. And in fact, even what the traditional curriculum may do in the South, in the US, and Texas, that write documents about how they hate OBE, they use these methodologies as well. So the point is, we need to fix up this confusion. Honorable members are absolutely right. That we have a revised curriculum. That's what the minister said. There's no big bag in there. But what we're clarifying is we're taking away those things that are causing confusion, which has simply taken all our attention into some debate, which is, should be put up. Because the main issue is how we take the issue. So I'm going to stop there. We can add to that if other people would like to add to that. But that's the key thing. Other stakeholders, it's an important question. We've presented different versions of this plan to the teacher union, all of them. We've presented it to SGB Association. We've presented it to QLTC. And we're keeping stakeholders on board. Obviously, again, it's a cabinet confidential document, so we haven't said it, but we kept them on board in terms of the presentation. And so far, all of them have expressed strong support for the trust and direction that it's taking. Will NIDU be cascaded? Like, it's clear that NIDU will not be provincialized. NIDU will only sit in a national office. But it could create capacity down, which is national capacity, in order to implement. Obviously, we will integrate and streamline different monitoring initiatives. But let me emphasize this point. NIDU will do independent monitoring. That doesn't allow us as a system and take us off the hook to monitor ourselves. We must monitor to see whether we are doing our work, feedback, pick up. But NIDU does it independently. Because otherwise, you know, we wait until NIDU tells us what's wrong. That you can't run a system like that. NIDU is independent. Teacher training, no, it's not about quick training. We'll come to you with a detailed framework for teacher development developed between the Department of Higher Education and Training and us, including key stakeholders, teacher unions in government, universities, etc. So we'll come to you on that. It's not about a one-hour thing. You know, it's also about the workbooks that we're trying to introduce, how the workbooks link to curriculum alignment, how it links to teacher development. We're creating an integrated approach for this thing. Mr. Mungwe, very important questions there again. Your primary question was around OBE. You raised the issues about principles methodology. I think you were anticipating my answer. And I responded to that. Orientation and training, I've answered that as well. But in terms of the foundation phase, the changes in the foundation phase are minimal, really. It's about getting the message across clearly. We circulated circulars and curriculum news on problems not getting to the teachers. but the need for orientation there is quite minimal. Mr. Fuller will speak more detail about that and clarify the question about that slide you've raised. In the evidence as well in terms of assessment, let me just clarify the point you raised about grade 3. It was very insightful of you, I must say, to pick up a contradiction in your slide, which it was. And we must clarify it in future slides. When we spoke about the external assessments in grade 3, yet NI is only literacy assessment. Right. He's thinking about all the subjects. Right. So that would be the 100% assessment. So you're right that it's wrong to say 100%. Right, so you're right, we will fix that out. Well, we'll have to work out how we do that, but you're absolutely right. Thanks for pointing that out to us. And then foundation phase, does it imply more teachers? We can still think about the details here, but we set a team in place to look at the implementation implications of these changes, especially so far as teachers, as final teachers.
Mm-hmm.
They come back with their initial report to say no. And the reason no is that in that phase, teachers are currently teaching more than one subject on any day. So if we rationalize one and we emphasize another one, it's still the same teacher who will be teaching them. They'll just teach it in a different arrangement of the curriculum. So that's our assessment currently, but we will continue to assess that because you're right that that's the key implementation issue that we've got to look at. Honorable Member Gasmain, I apologize for pronouncing that incorrect name. Okay, you pointed out that it's good we reflected the monitoring as part of our system. And again, very insightful, so we must fix this up. You said that in my preamble I spoke about other actors and I'm moving right again. What we presented is the high level indicators of the activities. In the activities they are. So we must make sure you get that. But thanks for that, that's a very important point. And then a compulsory education 7 to 15, how do we implement that? Let me say that currently, based on our assessment based on set of data, there's only about 2.5% of learners working. Now I say only, but to us it's too big. That translates into 200,000 learners. And most, so in most countries, it's not big. I mean, compare us even to like Brazil, we're much better in that sense. But 200,000 is still too much. Why? It's precisely for the point you made. In the rural areas, that's where they are. If you want to address rural poverty, this issue is inextricably linked to that. So we've got in our activity this identified mark as an issue that we must address. And lastly, mother tongue language in model C schools, how will that be dealt with? Currently, in terms of our law, it is the school governing body that has the right to determine the language of instruction for the foundation phase. So that's how it's determined. And again, as the profile of those model C schools changes, we must ensure that parents are empowered to be on the school governing body to make the right decision. Honorable Chair, I'll try to cover quickly the issues of me and the head of the community.
Honorable Chair, certainly I like this because it's not that much for me. and I think Vijay has spoken to the mother tongue issue, but yet another thing that we need to clarify as it relates to this recommendation. I think at the heart of this recommendation that has come from this process is that which seeks to, and I think it's something that we need to communicate so that it's also not lost.
Mm-hmm.
In the foundation phase, we promote the instruction of learners in their own mother tongue. And I think that's a fundamental aspect. So it does not replace. If my child goes to a Setswana school, they must continue to be taught in Setswana at the foundation phase, because research also begins to point cognitive development in that regard. However, what this particular recommendation has also sought to address is that what is it that you do for those learners who at a later stage will then be using English as a language of their university, and it is having to address that. Now, there was a question that Honorable Nune also raised in respect of part of what DJ responded to us in terms of the redeployment of teachers. One of the things that is already evident in some of these schools is that actually many of these schools, and in the Northwest, they have done a quick survey of about 200 schools, which also demonstrated that they introduced English as a subject in grade 3. So effectively, schools have been already using, so it is how they use teachers then for grade 2 and 1. So it is having to work with schools in that particular regard. And I thought it was quite important to give that explanation. The, as it relates to the school syllabus and how it should speak to learners and children, so I think a conscious decision that has been taken through this the development of the CAP document has been having to map out the entire curriculum from grade 1 through 12. And the whole idea was to ensure that, firstly, we could address the gap, but also ensure that there would be conceptual progression. Because oftentimes we have found that these things were not necessarily neatly tailor-made in our curriculum. And that subject map that has been put out for all of the different subjects has ensured, and we hope that it covers those specific particular areas in a more clearer fashion. The phase-in, phase-out of the CAP, and in terms of how whether learners in the in those learners that would not have had an opportunity, I think the only group here that is actually affected by this in the transitional phase would be fundamentally for the grade, for implementation in grade, in the foundation phase next year, would be your grade 2 learners who are currently your grade 1. And they would have missed, especially if they would not have done English as a subject. Mm-hmm. Now the question is, what is this that you do? So we have taken a conscious decision to identify the type of support that we will provide for those learners in grade 2 as a means of catching up with work that they would have done in grade 1. So it is pulling out all of the different aspects in that particular regard. As it relates to the scale of assessment for grade 1, and I think part of that DG spoke too, but let's also indicate that at 10, 11, and 12, we have not changed anything. It has always been, and it will remain, that your school-based assessment, which is internally set, internally marked, is always 25%. Or let's put it this way, it's 25% in 10, 11, and 12. At the end of the year, the examination counts for 75%. And you know that examination at grade 12 level is even external. So that has not changed anything. What the recommendation was talking to in respect of this is that there's always been a major gap. And it was also part of interpretation of curriculum and all of these other different concepts. There's always been a big gap between what the type of assessment that takes place in the GET band as compared to the SET band. And the question is, how then do you try to bring alignment to the two so that it could be incrementally introduced? At the level of foundation phase, researchers and everybody else have spoken against introducing high-level, high-stakes examination. But you cannot subject a 7-year-old, 8-year-old child to a two-hour, one-hour examination. There would be a different form. You could introduce tests and so on. So that is why it remains there for a continuous assessment that is undertaken. But it's not taking away that they do not do tests. I think an anomaly has been that we take it that they don't like tests. It does not mean that. I mean, many children, even at this point, they continue to. But to do that, you must have also helped these young people to get to a point. And I think our workbook, as an example, is also part of an indication of how we would get young people to be able to get that track on a continual basis, because that's when we develop their writing and reading skills in that particular regard. Didi, I think as far as I can pick up, you've also, Didi has spoken to the purpose of the ANA as well, because I think it's always something that always gets confusing. Similarly, with respect to the implementation. What I should say, Honourable Chairperson and members, is that we are also have taken note, and DG has spoken to, we have identified to say effective implementation of the curriculum and assessment policy statement in our school would require that certain things are set out and communicated very effectively. Mm-hmm. Firstly, we would need to have the CAP documents available. You cannot talk about CAP implementation if you do not have them available. So there's a whole process that we've also put in. I should also indicate to honorable members that will be, at the end of this month, we will have those, because that also indicates the direction in terms of policy direction that the minister is taking. We will have those curriculum and assessment policy statements set out for public comment in a gazette process that we will be implementing at the end. And that's also to ensure that everybody else would get to know, and if there are any comments that may need to be effected, they will be effected with clearing. The second is, and DJ has spoken to that as well, in relation to teacher training and orientation. I think we've also taken cue from the fact that more communication, and any other level of orientation would also be important for teachers. And I think other matters are dealt with in terms of how we would want to preempt some of the problems that we have noted ourselves with that. Thank you very much.
Most of the services are sourced
goes to the Section 21. So this issue of trying to help the lenders and the educators, because educators become disempowered. Management they decide this is the provider that we will do. And the tax book will help the lenders that are supposed to get the knowledge that they expect.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My question is about the foundation phase, intermediate phase, and the senior phase, the hours allocated to education. If my calculation is correct, the first one is 23 hours, the second one is 27.5 hours, and the senior phase is 25.5 hours. Now, my understanding is maybe the senior phase must have more hours. Why they have less, if my calculation is correct, less than the intermediate phase is 27.5, and the other one is 5.5 hours.
Thanks, it's actually pronounced Father, which is German. And then I would just like to say that me and my colleague here, it's not that we are not listening to the principle, but it's actually very serious issues and we don't want to miss on it. So we are convening between each other that I don't ask the same questions or we wasting the time of our DG here. I just want to make also sure, is it Mr. O'Brien or Mr. O'Brien? I just want to know on the NIDO moderation and advice and advisors, which is the same thing, but are they going to be accredited with SACWA? On which level will that moderation be? And then I would like to be the responsibility on the budget of this independent assessors and moderators. We will look after that because obviously it's going to be cost to government and we will be able to find, is it going to be financed by whom? Thank you very much.
Good morning, everybody. My apologies to RSA. I did not want to speak, but I feel like I don't have a question. I've got a concern. DC and your team, I'm from DC. So when you look at the school in the Eastern Cape, the district office, the ETO, everybody who is involved in education, there are district offices that I can say that they are non-operational because some of the advisors or DESS, whatever, the DCS, whatever name it is, those people, they need a proper training. When I was a teacher, one of those subject advisors called us in for training, and when we arrived there, she actually asked us, why did you call us? You call us from the district office, you as teacher, what do you want us to do for you? And we were like, nothing. We said, no, don't do anything. We are okay. And we went out of the workshop or whatever meeting they called us for. We need to see to it that there is proper training, not only for you or only for the provincial offices, to the because those people must see to it that what the national office wants to implement on the lower level must be implemented in the right way. For example, you said that you want this curriculum to be effective. How is it going to be effective if we've got such people who do not really know what are they there for. So I don't mean they should be taken out of the system or be retrenched, but we need to train them in the proper way, and we need to assess their work. We need to do evaluation on them so that we can see what we want or what we anticipate is really done at the lower level. Thank you. I'm sorry for my voice. The women's team.
Thank you, Honorable. I know you've got the best.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. These are all issues that
really is the reality that we have to work on. Just regarding my surname, it's not very good. It's often been called Subriani. The closer it gets to lunch, it seems that we see what they call it. I don't know why. Let me start in order with the questions you asked. Mr. Mashamayeti, special effort to the right school. What does the right school mean in this context? What we've done before is, doesn't matter what the problem is in school. If we have an intervention, we say, let's run a workshop, we run a workshop for all. What we're saying here, in some schools the problem is the principal, which is not in the school. Fix their problem. So the right effort in the right school means, if it's a principal intervention or training thing, it must go to the school that needs. If it's a teacher deployment thing, it must go to the school. If it's about textbook management, that's basically it. Now how will that happen? It will happen with NR results, it will happen with new evaluation, that's my outlook. So that every intervention is tailored to a real need. That's what we mean by that. The right intervention, special effort to be sure that efforts are directed. The social contract with teachers is the contract which initially was independent and voluntarily announced by the teacher to say, under no pressure, they committed themselves to social contract. We built on that in time spent into the quality of learning and teaching care. So it includes not just teacher unions and government, as in the state. It includes parents, it includes learners, and now we're bringing the private sector, so it's a social contract that goes beyond that. There's just two questions there. Ms. Mugger's question is very important. Let me just give some clear indication of what we will do. The delivery agreement will be signed in the end of September. Before that, we will give you copies of the action plan itself. Remember, the action plan is a big one. We'll give you that detail document. That will go public domain before the decision. Before we get to a press conference on this, I want to undertake to give you copies of it so that when you're interviewed by the media, you speak on it before. We'll get it through to everyone who's before that. Honorable Chairperson, we've been struggling with how we deal with this thing about communication with oversight institutions in Parliament. And we felt that it's not enough for us to come here for these meetings because it doesn't happen to be enough. We need some ongoing thing. What we want to introduce is this system, we'd like you to consider this. There's a GCIS facility here, which is video conferencing for the media. We've got video conferencing in our boardroom. We want to have more regular interaction. Even if it's like half an hour or an hour, whoever can make it, we'll say this is what we're going to do. We've done. This is a new thing we want to talk about. We've spoken to the portfolio committee about that in the National Assembly. They're making arrangements to do that. We can even do it jointly with some of these. Just present it to you, and we can then get it into action. We're establishing in the department what we're calling a delivery response. That is to work with problems on an ongoing basis. Every week we try and make an assessment of what that is problem. We want to be able to sit and communicate that. The issues you've spoken about now is reality, about what's happening on the ground. So what we're doing in essence is saying, we don't anymore want to hear about how many guidelines we're sending into the school. Because you're right, that's not the issue. The issue is, do we understand the difficulty of implementation on the ground? That's where the delivery agreement comes from. And everyone is trying to work towards that. You are right, it's not really true. But at least we must appreciate the complexity and then look at dealing with it. We've made a rule now in the department. We don't hear the word guidelines. We don't hear what we said in school. We don't hear those things. We want to hear how we're dealing with implementation challenges in the context that we described. So I'm raising two issues here. I'm saying that reality we have acknowledged, we're trying to deal with it, we recognize it's different. Linked to that, we want to open an ongoing communication channel. And we think it's best done through this video conferencing. In addition, we'll come. But the thing is, like, frankly, it cost me about 8 to 9 hours to come here. And then I'm still not counting the time. If we can do this thing, I can just take off like an hour out of my program and give you a thorough briefing and bring all the senior colleagues to affect it. So I really want to appeal that we try that in addition to us coming here for these meetings. So then, to come back to your question,
we will send you the detailed document. We will then either directly here or through video conferencing engage with you in terms of your questions that you have asked. The advantage of video conferencing is we can assemble many more people on that side to deal with these areas to respond to your questions. And it will be at a predetermined time. So that's what we want to propose. On the national catalog, LTSM, we're monitoring that in terms of Section 21 schools. You know, this has been a problem that we, you know, we try to address. And every time we try to address, the publishers, the big publishers come down on us and they want to sue us. We've got a meeting up again, they want to sue us for this thing. But what happens, as the Honourable Member is raising, is a reality. The big publishers have got muscle. So they send people to the school and they market.
Yeah.
Now, marketing means here's something for you. No, here's not bloody, here's something for you. And this book and so forth. You just get it. Now, it's state money. And they're depriving us of our rights as a state to say, we're going to buy these textbooks. You think, no, but what about the teacher's discretion? The reality is, teachers are not exercising discretion on educational grounds. They're exercising it on some other grounds. So, very much an issue on the agenda. And as that recommendation emerges from the LTSM committee, we're still thinking about. We're trying to address the issue. But we're going to have war. I know we're going to have war. But we're bracing ourselves to stand up for that issue because there's a lot at stake here. This industry has got it's billions that we're talking about here. And education is a big thing. Mr. De Villiers, that question will be answered by Mr. Basue. Mr. Farber, not really accredited. The only accreditation for a moderator is where you're moderating courses. Not the moderators that need to be so they don't need to be accredited. They are assessors. It's like our subject assessors. They don't have to be, we assess the teacher. They don't have to be accredited. In tech, in terms of a particular training program that you do somewhere, you need to get it formally assessed. You go to an accredited. So we covered on that one. In terms of NIDU, the funding for NIDU comes directly from the sector, but not via me as a DG, because that will create a problem. So it comes in terms of the treasury allocation. It's allocated on our book, but it's directly. Ring fence is directly going to go to them. So we don't have any say in how it gets to them. Obviously, they have to account to other youth, but the point is we try to keep that independent. So the money comes from the state itself. And the way the treasury is doing it, they put in an amount which will grow over the years as we do get institutionalized. Right. Honourable Member Rantro, I mean, you know, when you started and you said Eastern Cape, you know, I think, my auntie, you know, because we have a huge challenge. And you put your finger on the that we've created. We've just been talking as we're coming here, that I have to go now, next week, or even I don't know, next week, but I have to go to Eastern Cape to deal with some of these issues. You write about these subject advisors, and a lot of them, Honourable Chair, are appointed based on poor procedures. Now, training is important, Honourable Chair, but training can't fix a bad appointment. We must make sure that appointment, if somebody gets to be a subject advisor, there's somebody who can exercise leadership among teachers. You know, they somebody who's written about their peers are able to lead, which is why when we do this linguistic improvement policy training, we say it's not just about posts, it's about what kind of people I am. Now, the other thing you notice when I made my presentation, I said on the chat, we're not only talking anymore about what we must do in the school, we're talking about what is the capability of this bureaucracy, including districts and support. So for now, it's receiving explicit attention in terms of development, but also in terms of accountability. You know, the NR results I spoke about, we're not only going to hold the school accountable for that, no. We're going to hold the district accountable. So we're saying to that person who called you for training, what's happening here with teachers, you know, clearly there's a problem in terms of learning in the school. What have you done? What have you done to develop the teachers? What have you done with the teachers? So that's where we want the accountability to go. In law currently, the improvisation for us to have performance agreements with senior management and also middle management. A lot of these people are middle management. We want to have performance agreements with them, linked to us. Not only work, you see the problem here. If you have a performance agreement at a workplace, the family workshop you have, that's when your problem comes. That's when they call you to workshop where they can pick it up.
Yeah.
That's not a performance agreement. Zonas agreement is, how, to what extent is the school under your management to improve their results?
Mm.
That is the
yeah.
So that's what we will do. And then, Chairperson, you've raised important issues here in terms of implementation, communication with the ground. What on earth is there, which Mosul will pick up? You know, the communication with the school is probably one of our biggest challenges. In part, it's caused by that failure of the district.
Mm-hmm.
In part. Because, you know, we send circulars, A, they don't deliver, B, it's the district official's responsibility to help teachers to interpret those communications. Especially key things, like the curriculum revision. They should be in the school, helping, you know, where that goes. In fact, very often the department calls the district official, the curriculum people, and workshops with them. What do these changes mean? So that they can have those workshops in a proper manner. So that is something we recognize as a big, big challenge. We're trying to fix it in a number of ways. I've spoken about accountability, I've spoken about development. We also want to supply tools. For example, on each big thing, we want to provide like a very clear set of tools using DVD, using, you know, IT support things, using circulars, books and so forth to say, when you communicate LCS and curriculum revision, what you should do is run a workshop. If you're running a workshop, these are the things you should do. So to help them, to guide them in how they should do it. But it is a major problem. And then, of course, your point about implementation on the ground. That plan stands before the operation. And we can't do it. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you very much. As it relates to the time, a quick one in that, remember we're not changing the curriculum, we're repackaging. Mm-hmm. And the instructional times that are currently there is what currently is. However, you may ask, why are we not, because the question is, why are we increasing the intermediate and reducing the senior phase? Remember, we are reducing to six, but what we want to do is to ensure that the foundational knowledge go deep and ensure that by the time they come out of the foundation phase, they have the knowledge, they've got the grasp of the fundamental basics of whatever subject that they're doing as a means of ensuring that they could do more. Unlike having to cut it in the intermediate phase and increase it in the senior phase. Start it at the lower level and increase it in that particular regard. So that's the basis on which we think. While we're giving an indication that although we have reduced, we've also ensured that limit, but ensure that the key foundational knowledge areas that are required are dealt with, and that's why the time allocations that have been proposed. However, if there are any suggestions in terms of time allocations that may be required, surely the public comment process may direct guidance in that particular regard. Chairperson, the issue in relation to the sex groups that are currently in the system, one of the things that we have always said about as a department with regard to the writing of textbooks has been to say textbooks should never have followed the phase, because in terms of knowledge, how you develop knowledge, they should never have gone to say learning outcome one assessment, because then they begin to break it down. We had always said textbooks must begin to give a broad aspect of what is the knowledge that we need to give. So as in this regard, coming to your question, at grade 10, 11 and 12, those textbooks would be along similar lines. So what we would expect to do, and what the BD is also now doing from a curriculum point of view in terms of gaps, we are only identifying those subjects where there might have been gaps, where there might have been a sequencing, and we will make that available to teachers in training programs as a means of ensuring that they would know, so they don't have to discuss those things. Where we may need to get totally new books would be in areas where we've always worked on provincial catalogs, because as we move to a national catalog, clearly we would have to put plans in place to ensure that we bring a national catalog process into being. But equally, even in that regard, we would have to demonstrate which are the areas that have never been addressed in any of the books and how then do we address them. But clearly, a person, you see what, Chair, at the heart of the question you're asking is, do teachers also know how to use text? Because that's another thing. All of us could have that, but what support do you then provide to learners and teachers and everybody else to use the textbook in a most meaningful of ways? And I think that's at the heart of that. So that we don't discuss that.
That's one thing. to the digits. There are one member talked about the rural areas. When the people got a perception that the rural areas is the Sky, Transkei, Venda, and Lopo, that one. No. There are rural towns.
Yeah.
Please, the focus also must be on those rural towns, because if you go to those rural towns, you know that in the Eastern Cape, in those rural towns, there is that where you get children that are moving from those rural towns to Joburg and go and commit more crime, because there's now no one who's observing them as they are growing up, especially on education. I think also we should take notice of those small Anyana towns like Johnsonville, where I come from.
Just one comment, Chairperson. I'm a little bit very much worried about the 2-hour difference between the intermediate and the senior students. Maybe you must apply your mind to that, because I'm worried if those learners, they are on their way home and the other ones are still sitting there. What will the perception and the influence on those learners and those staff be? If they see the learners in the other place, they are actually coming. No answer on that, just to apply the mind. Thank you.
Down there, this little that has been forwarded. I'm just saying,
you look at the practicality, you find that.
That was a long one,
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to comment to the DJ. I think that Subrini is going to go well now.
Thanks, another chapter in that my last words is to say, because I was once there and I was trying to help educators more than the department was doing, there is anxiety out there because of how media is communicating. Maybe if you can summarize what has been changed in a leaflet like 3 page or 4 page, and then out there to foundation phase that are implementing next year, and then explaining to the intermediate and whatever, it will make a difference rather than them on the district officials there who are going to disown this. We also don't know what has been changing. You know? So our appeal is that there has to be that calming and explaining what exactly is happening.
Thank you,
Honorable
Members.
Thank
I think I just want to speak to the teachers that you consult. We had a workshop last week at the committee where we looked at intellectual communication and you know how to be as inclusive and our program. We came to also to the issue of that we should also look into the issue of joint teaching.
Yeah, I'm not going to take care of it.